on tape number 3.
And we were talking about going to Italy and you met
I was in Italy, and the message from my brother, which was misunderstood by me, was don't come to Palestine. Actually, when I met him later, because 24 years after he left Poland, for the first time I met my brother again. So when I met him later, he said he didn't mean this. He wanted me to wait in Italy because his family, his new family, because he was married also to a girl from Romania. As a matter of fact, I found out only 3 years ago that his wife was related to my wife indirectly.
Oh, isn't that?
And they come from the same area in Romania, which is unbelievable. But anyhow, when I got message, don't come to Palestine, I was then in Naples. And we were also in a refugee camp there, and we decided to go to South Italy. And we decided, by then we knew that there was illegal Aliyah Bet to Palestine, and my wife was in a Beitar movement, which is totally right, which is the ones that were the fighters in Israel. We decided we're going to organize a kibbutz preparation in Italy. And we got help from the Palestine Brigade and from the Americans. And we set up a camp in almost the lowest part of Italy, south, near Mediterranean, that you could almost jump across Mediterranean and be in Palestine. The name of the town was Tricase. And we used to sing those Hebrew songs and learn Hebrew. You know, I was the one that spoke Hebrew. My wife had some background in it because she went to Haider. And I was by then committed that we're going to get married someday. And we were going steady already. And in that camp, we got married. The whole camp came to the wedding. And after the wedding night, we went on a honeymoon in Italy. Again, we have identification, we didn't need the money. So we went from there to Rome, from Rome to Venice. And from Venice, we went to another camp.
You didn't go back to the same camp?
We didn't go to the same camp
because
we heard.
What was the first camp?
The first camp was just an organized young people dreaming of going with Aliyah Bet. That's all. With Ruach, the feeling, Jewish feeling, and free, and with the preparation of learning how to use any guns or fight to fight for freedom of Palestine. The second camp was real. And the second camp was in near Padova. Near Padova in Italy, North Italy, was Fano. The name of the camp was actually, no name of the camp, but in the town of Fano, and was maritime fishing camp, fishing kibbutz camp. And we were learning how to catch fish, how to build ships, how to go fishing, how to navigate. I went to special courses to learn how to build housing, because we were going to go with Aliyah Bet on the ship that we will build and create our own fisherman kibbutz. And as I was in this camp, my wife in the meantime got in touch with her family in America. The confirmation of my brother's statement made me decide that the only way would be to go is to America. Since we were going to go to America, it was unfair for us to stay in this camp because the rest of them were going to Palestine then. So we left the camp, we went to Rome. We lived in a refugee camp there, and I went to school. I learned Italian, And I went to engineering college, civil engineering. I was in that camp.
In
Italy altogether were 2 years.
And in Rome?
We were in Rome, we wound up over a year. It was an accelerated course that in 1 year I got a degree in civil engineering, but it wasn't civil engineering, it was surveying degree. The name of the school was Istituto Tecnico per Geometria a Roma. It was technical institute where you got your degree and you were able to build any housing up to 2-story high, build the roads, and I figured I have my education, and by then my wife got the papers to go to America, and we went to Naples to board the ship, because we went on a Truman quota. We got the visa to come to America. Truman quota was the refugee quota. And we were going to come to America. And in June of 1947, we arrived in New York.
Okay, before we go into your New York experiences, after the war, I know you had a large family, and you had many cousins. I assume that people were looking for people, and your cousins were married.
Sure, we were looking. But I didn't find anybody.
You had no cousins?
The only people that I met, it were friends from the same school, were people from the camp that I knew, were people that knew my family. I have not found anybody from my family. I have found out many years later about my brother, who has gotten married in Palestine, who fought for Israel. His wife comes from a family that fought in Irgun Tzvi Leumi for the freedom. My brother was in Haganah. The first person that came back after the war was my uncle, the son of grandmother that I spent time with that I buried. Her son came with his wife to Palestine, and my brother settled him in Tzfat. There was one cousin that showed up, the ones that survived, as a German, and he lived in America someplace. He changed his name. And there was another aunt with her husband, with a daughter that came to Haifa, and my brother helped them settle in Haifa. And Zahava is still living there. She got married to another survivor, and the two of them made a life in Haifa. My uncle died, his wife died. There was another uncle that went back to Poland. He and his wife were telling us about his children that were killed by the Germans. And he lived through it. He went back to Poland. He sold everything that was ours and his and everybody's, took the money and paid off the Polish government to go to Palestine. And my brother helped him settle in Tel Aviv. And he worked in Tel Aviv till his death. And a few years later, about 2 years ago, his wife died. And this is all the family from all the cousins that I know of.
Your brother was where in Israel?
My brother was in Haifa.
In Haifa.
And my brother died 3 years ago. And actually, as far as I know, I am the only survivor of my generation from my family.
There was another question that I had, and I don't know, we've kind of talked about it, but we haven't talked about it in detail, if you would want to or be willing to. When you were selected to do labor and some of the people you knew were selected to go in another direction, we've heard so much about the selections, quote, unquote. Would you be willing to describe
the selections? I think I told you that my first experience of selection, it was the hardest because I was still with my mother and my sister, and being that I was the man of the house, I was trying to save him. Mm-hmm. And when I went to the German and he has chosen to accept the bribe,
right.
But then he took only my sister and me and let my wife, my mother go. Mm-hmm. This was my first experience of selection. They just said, you live and you die. Mm-hmm. And not in that way. They said, you go in this direction and you go in that direction. You stay with this group, you stay with that group.
Mm-hmm.
So the ones that stay with one group were the ones that wound up in camp working with me. The other ones vanished.
Right.
They vanished from our life. Mm-hmm. We didn't know what happened to them.
Right.
We did not know not at that time.
Right.
Not even many, many months later.
Mm-hmm.
We thought that they went to some labor camp, someplace. Even though my sister kept screaming at me from that boxcar, run away because we're going to death, and you might as well go and see if you can catch up with your uncle who is in Krakow. Who could believe it? I mean, you saw it, but you saw individual basis. You knew that, that some towns were totally shut up. You know, we were talking about resistance. I told you that I knew then that some towns stood up in resistance,
and
a result of it was they took the whole town and they shot them and they buried them. And there was nobody left from the town. So selection was horrors. The second horror was when you in camp and when you were called in and to be counted because somebody was missing. Somebody escaped from the camp. And when they counted, they were missing. When they heard that one barrack wasn't complete, and each barrack, they had a supervisor.
They were called in,
the whole group, everybody, instead of thousands of us, in the big camp, we were thousands of us. They stood up, thousands of us, and they will count, and we'll stay there for hours. And people were fainting. And they were degrading us. They were totally making animals out of us. We were nothing. We had no rights. We had no hope. My hope.
It's incredible that they counted every day. And if one person they had thousands.
Because they, this is the only way they kept the control of us, by constantly picking at us, chipping at us, dehumanizing us. How did I live through it? I remembered one prayer, Shema. Every time I was scared, every time I felt dehumanized, I used to repeat it and say it. And this is the only prayer I remembered through the war. So I truly, this is one of the things, when I lectured to children, I used to say to them, you have to learn because the prayers give you the strength. And that prayer gave me the strength so I could think about this beautiful life before the war and hope that there will be again life like that.
Shema Israel. I think we're on to a more optimistic note when we talk about the future that we're going through now into America. What is Libby's full name?
Her name was Tenenhaus. Liba Tenenhaus, but her name when I met her was Schulzinger. Why?
Why?
Libby left Romania hoping to go with Aliyah Bet. There were organizers in Romania, illegally in Russia. The Palestine Brigade has people who went in who were taking people. They had number of papers that were prepared. And they were finding people that looked almost like the papers, and they used to take them. She looked like somebody by the name Tanzi Schulzinger, and they gave her the paper that said, your name is Tanzi Schulzinger, you're going to Palestine. So she left Romania going to Palestine.
With a different name.
Then, finally, I found out her name was Liba Tenenhaus.
Oh, my.
And I met her family in New York. who accepted me.
Her family, her parents or her?
Her uncle. Her parents died.
Yes, that's
right. She saw her parents die. Mm. She has a story of her own where she was hiding in Ukraine. They took her and her parents from Romania and they were transporting them to a labor camp. And on the way, people were getting sick and her parents got sick and died. And she escaped, and she was hiding it with Ukrainians. She learned how to speak Ukrainian, and she tells some stories, but she tells only to me. She doesn't tell it to the world that she was making whiskey out of potatoes and grain for the Ukrainians because this is the way you live there, contraband or whatever. And one of the way that she was helping herself to survive by telling fortune from the cards. She learned how to do that. Don't ever tell my wife that I said that. But this is the way she survived. And this is the way, finally, after the war ended, she decided to go to college. She went back to Bukovina.
In Romania?
In Romania. Yeah. Then she went to her little town, Suceava, and she saw that her house where she lived with her parents was torn apart. So she went back to Bukovina and she went to school. And she was studying in Bukovina. Some of her friends became hard communism, active in the Communist Party, and she wanted to go to Palestine, and that's how she left Romania, and that's how I met her. The fate wanted that she will go there to that border and meet me.
Right. So she was able not to stay away from the concentration camps, just to keep her...
She never was in concentration camp.
To maintain her.
No. She escaped.
Yeah. I see you came to America and you were met by Libby's relatives. Did you come to Ellis Island?
No. When I came to America, there was no Ellis Island. On the ship was the last inspection and they had doctors and they checked you out and you came in. And when we got off the ship, it was Saturnia, it was an Italian ship. And I had one nickel and two suitcases.
So where'd
one
you get
suitcase,
the nickel,
I had books. Her family sent her money. But from all the money, there was left the nickel. Why? Because I kept the nickel just in case we have to call somebody. I didn't know what's going to happen. So when we came off the ship, we had two suitcases. In one suitcase, I had books from the school because I wanted to be an engineer. After all, my brother studied to be an engineer. I wanted to be like him. My big brother, 4 years older than me. And the other suitcase was some rags, some things that we wore. And that's how we came.
I answer.
Okay. So that's the way it was. So,
and when you came here, where did you live?
You have it
did
on?
You, yes, what's on?
Mm-hmm.
So where did
back,
you live?
We came to America.
Year.
Oh, right.
In June of 1947, we came to my wife's aunt and her husband and two children, which was in Brooklyn. And the children went to camp because it was in the summer of 47, and they went on vacation and they left us in the house. They said, this is your house, you have food in the refrigerator. And my wife was the only one that spoke English. So I was trying to learn English, but first thing we were trying to get a job. And the first money that we got was just enough to buy milk and bread. It was very little. My wife was working in a sweat factory, you know, where they manufacture dresses. And I started working as a cabinet maker. This was my first job.
Okay, will you tell us more about your wife's family?
Good.
Her family in Romania, her family in New York also.
My wife comes from a very Orthodox family. Her father was a Hussite, was a whole bit, was a kapota that we're talking about, was a pious. He was one of the people from his family that maintained the Orthodox. They had a store there, and he actually maintained two rabbis. He was a Hussite to two rabbis. You know, you have to understand, in Poland, if somebody was a Hussite, he supported the Jewish movement by making his donations to the rabbis who in turn were teaching the other Jewish people how to be Orthodox and how to live. This is one of the reasons that they didn't come to America, because his family, the whole family, came to America. They lived all over, but mainly in New York.
This is Libby's father's family.
Libby's father's family. Mm-hmm. So when the Germans were in Romania, they were evacuating the Jewish town where she lived in, the Jewish section, and taking all the Jews to a labor camp, and they walked. Libby tells the story how her father took suitcases of books, because this was the most important thing to him. And on the way, they died from sickness.
I see.
So when they passed away, she was alone, a young girl. At that time, she must have been about 13, 14 years old. Mm-hmm. She ran away from the transport and hid.
Isn't that incredible?
With Ukrainians. So she worked with the Ukrainians.
Did they know she was Jewish?
The ones that were hiding her knew. Nobody else did. So in the town around there, they thought that she was Romanian who wound up there in Ukraine, and they was working there. Mm-hmm. And this is the way she survived all the way through till the Russians pushed the Germans back. And then this was near the end, because this was, you know, the Jews in Romania were taken into camp much later than we in Poland. So in a short time, she survived it, and she went back to Romania under Russian occupation. And this is when she went to school in Bukovina, and this is how she knew about this movement of going to Palestine with Aliyah Bet. And that's how I met her. Her family in New York, we got to know, and they were very, very nice people. I became a part of her family, and I got involved in the family.
Is this the father's brother who went to New York now?
The father's brother who was in New York, who was in the sweat factory, you know, he was making dresses. And then there was another sister. There was two sisters. One of them was single, and I don't remember what she was working also. She died a few years back, many years back.
So they must have come to America in the 20s
and 30s. Oh, a long time ago. The whole family moved, including the grandmother.
I have to ask this. Everyone seemed to have come here but her father.
That's right.
Now, why didn't he?
Because he was a Hussite. And the rabbi said, don't go, because he, after all, he was supporting the rabbi. I mean, this I'm blaming on the rabbi.
Right.
You know, this is true. But the fact is that he stayed there because Trefeland, America was known for the Orthodox as Trefeland, a place where the Jews work on Shabbos.
Yeah.
And her father wasn't going to go to Trefeland. They didn't know that you can live kosher life here. All they knew that you go then, the whole family, you know, his brother was working on Shabbos. He was a factory man.
Yeah.
And his sister was married to a guy that worked on Shabbos. He knew these things.
Right.
So this is one of the things.
So by the time you got here.
When we got here,
we
went to his father's sister and her family. And this is where we got ourselves established. We stayed there with them till they came back from vacation, and then we rented a furnished room in Brooklyn. And I had a job by then. I was earning all of $40 a week, and she was earning all of $28 a week.
It's
1947.
Oh, I'm thinking.
This is 1947. And we were saving. I found a saving book. Just the other day when I was cleaning up the basement, and we were saving $10 a week and $15 a week. We are already saving in 1947, right after we came in, because we were thinking of the future. We lived in a furnished room, and we had to think of an apartment, of something settling down. You know,
you were in New York City then?
I was in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and we lived in Brooklyn, New York. And I worked in New York and Manhattan. I was working in many jobs, and this is a story by itself. You wouldn't want to hear of the jobs I
had.
Yes,
we would.
I mean, to give you shortly, I was working as a porter in a restaurant, as a waiter, as a short order cook, salad man, restaurant manager. I was before that, of course, the first job was in, as a cabinet maker.
Right.
I was making furniture, and I was working with my hands, and I was learning English. I went to school studying English, and I went to Bernard Baruch School learning accounting because I wanted to get back something, you know, get back into the normal kind of a life for a Jewish boy, for a man with my background. I didn't want to be a laborer, but to make a living, I had to do something. So for, I would say, up to the year of 1949, for 2 years.
Right. You went to
school, I went through
you
everything.
Worked.
I went to school and I worked, and I worked on many jobs. And some of them was as a waiter, and some of them was as a short order cook. And then, as working as a cabinet maker, I hurt my wrist, and my wife's cousin, who was a doctor, said, your wrist is weak and you should not use it. You should find another profession. So the only profession I could think of, we have saved up some money, was to buy a candy store and become a candy store owner.
Oh.
So I became a candy store
you
owner.
Didn't.
How did you save so much money, Mark?
We
You're
didn't.
Incredible.
I went and I borrowed money from a Shylock.
Uh-huh.
And Libby was working, and I was saving, and we paid it off within
That's
a year. We paid double
so
the amount that I borrowed. We paid double in 1 year, and the candy store was in Brooklyn on 39th Street and 3rd Avenue. And I was in a candy store business for 2 years, and after that, they were tearing down the building to build a road there. So I went to work in a restaurant.
Oh, that's not fair.
And as working as a short order cook in a restaurant, a man walked in who knew me, and we got talking. And he said, what do you do in a restaurant with your background? And I said, "What's a living?" So he says, well, I can't offer you a lot of money, but you can start working in the accounting department of Zim Israel Navigation Company if you want to.
What company?
Zim Israel Navigation. Zim Israel Navigation.
ZIM.
Zim Israel Navigation Company was a shipping company from Israel that was had a headquarters of America in New York. They had ships coming in, American Israeli Shipping Company had ships coming in and carrying freight.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a couple passenger ships too. And I took his offer up based on my conversation with the owner of the restaurant. I said to him, what happens if I can't earn a living on the other job? So he says, you can come here anytime.
Wow.
So he was a Jewish man, wonderful guy. So I left the job and I went to work for half the money that I was earning as a short order.
Because the position was more.
Sure, was a bookkeeper. And within a year from a bookkeeper, I became an office manager of that office. And within 2 years, no, within 3 years, from bookkeeping, then from office management, I had it organized. We enlarged the office from 25 people to over 100 people. It became a large company. It's a Mediterranean agency for freight. And we had rented a pier. I have developed plans for the office for enlarging as an office manager.
Mm-hmm.
As a reward, my company sent my wife and 2 kids then on the ship to Israel, and they paid my plane fare to Israel.
Oh.
And this is how I went in 1962 for the first time to meet my brother again.
How old were your children? When were they born?
One was 6 and the other one was 11.
So they were born in, what, 50 to 51, 55 or so?
56, I think it was 1951 and 56.
And they are boys, they are girls?
Boys, two boys.
Their names?
Victor, the older one, and Teddy. And Libby, my wife, went on the ship to Israel. And I flew into Israel to be there a day before the ship arrived.
Mm-hmm.
And this is for the first time I met my brother after 24 years.
How exciting.
And he started talking Polish to me, and I said, I don't speak Polish, speak to me Hebrew. I don't know Hebrew well enough, I'll speak to you English. His English was weak, my Hebrew was weak, but we were able to communicate between Hebrew and English. So this is the first time we talked. He introduced me to his wife and 3 daughters. And next day, my wife and 2 boys came in, and I introduced them to my wife and to the boys.
Sorry, yeah.
And this is when I found out that he married a Romanian girl. And he found out I married a Romanian girl. And the girls found out from each other that they live not far from each other. And we made an acquaintance with that family. We stayed there for a month, and my brother took time off, and he was showing us.